chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Mark Hirschberg on the show today. Mark is a seasoned CTO, professor, startup guru, and the author of The Career Toolkit, Essential Skills for Success That No One Taught You. So, Mark, I am so incredibly excited about this conversation today. I cannot wait to dig into this. I'm so glad that you and I connected. So thank you so much for making time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Well, let's just dig right in. There's so much I want to talk about, but take us back to growing up for you.
I grew up as a classic 80s nerd. I grew up loving chess and math and science and Dungeons and Dragons and all that fun stuff, which didn't make for the best of childhoods. I certainly suffered the way many of us did back in the 80s when you had those types of interests, but it was certainly a good foundation for learning and education and my future career. So pluses and minuses in that childhood.
Sure. Tell me, what was it? Was it your dad? I mean, or was there somebody else in your life that got you interested? Why were you even interested in these things?
I think it's somewhat innate. My parents were great, and my father, who's a physician, certainly encouraged the science. He used to wake up early on his Saturday mornings to drive me to science talks, for which I am always very appreciative. But, you know, I look at my nephews, my brother's kids, I see the same thing. One of them, he just loved math from almost the day he was born, just like I did. So I think there's something innate in some of our family genes.
Yeah. Okay. So you had this love. It's no surprise that you ended up going into this, like, for your education. You've got a BS in physics, a BS in electrical engineering and computer science, a master's in engineering and computer science, and you focused on cryptography, and you got all that from MIT.
I loved MIT. That was Mecca. That is when you are a nerd, that's where you want to go. And really just had a great time exploring lots of different areas of science and even non-science. I minored in political science, so I got very into some of the social sciences. Some of my favorite classes were history of science and technology, and deepening my understanding not only of pure science, but how science and engineering fits into our culture and how culture impacts our scientific development and vice versa.
Oh, wow. I love that. So are you an avid reader?
I am. This is my display bookcase, but I have four other bookcases full of books, hundreds of books I've read. Even my own book, I cite probably close to 20 different books that influenced parts of the book I wrote. I list on my website even more books I've read that influenced my own development. Reading is really instrumental in how I've developed my own professional skills and my life.
You know, I read a quote, once we're finished with universities, once the professors are finished with us, our best university is a great collection of books.
Very true. And I think I grew up with my father had in his study a bookshelf with all these great books. And I remember just being so impressed by them. And when I grew up, I wanted to have a lot of books. I wanted to read this stuff and have all this knowledge. And I think that imprinted on me very young.
Very good. So, I mean, you've had really an illustrious career too. You know, Mark, I'm just going to read a few things here. You're a seasoned executive and cybersecurity expert who can bridge the divide between business and technology. You've started growth and fixed startup companies spanning 10 different verticals, as well as helping two Fortune 500 companies with their internal startup initiatives. Right now, I believe you're serving as a fractional CTO. So you've done so much in your career. When you graduated from MIT, what was your first job?
My first job was actually research staff at MIT. I didn't have a clear plan when I graduated. I looked around. I said, okay, don't want to work for Wall Street. I don't want to work for big tech. Back then, it was basically Microsoft, IBM. I don't want to do management consulting. So I kind of said, okay, I'm gonna stall for a year. I got a job as research staff. And then after that, I fell into doing a tech startup only because I eliminated all the other possibilities. This is before I started thinking about my career plan. I just said, well, I guess I'll do this. And thankfully, it turns out I love doing startups, but I didn't know it at the time. And so I wound up there and then realized it was such a good fit for me.
Right. And you've done it a lot. Well, okay. So 20 years ago, though, you actually returned to MIT and you started a class there. And I think it's called Career Success Accelerator. And I really want to dig into, now you've authored a book. Why did you feel like you needed to go and start this Career Success Accelerator class at MIT? And I know you've also started classes at Harvard as well.
When I first started interviewing 20 plus years ago, I found that when I would ask someone a technical question, how would you configure the server? How would you design the system? They'd give me the answer. Usually they got straight out of the book or the class. And go, okay, great. You know what you're doing here. But then I would ask a question, what are some of the team challenges in software? What makes someone a good leader? And I'd get these blank stares. And I realized, well, they were never taught that. I was never taught that either, but I had gone out with all these books that I had to learn and understand it. And I got lucky that way, but other people weren't learning it. And so I looked to develop these skills in the people I hired. I couldn't hire for it, so I had to build it. I had to develop it in my team. And after doing this for a year, I heard MIT was finding a similar challenge. MIT had been getting feedback that we're not producing leaders. We're producing technically very strong people. And in fact, we have a number of skills I talk about in the book and that we have in the class that come from feedback from corporate America. And they've given similar feedback to other universities. This is not MIT specific. This is not college student specific. These are the skills: leadership, negotiating, networking, communication, teamwork. These are the skills corporate America wants to see and they're not finding. So MIT happened to get a great grant from Desh Deshpande, who said, I want to fund a program that will help with these types of skills. He was very broad. He didn't say these specifically. And as MIT was putting it together, I heard about this and said, you know, I've been developing some of this on my own. Can I be of any help? I'm happy to share what I've learned. So I said, yes, please come help us develop this class. And after we spent a couple months developing it, they said, you know, we have all these great professors, but you bring a different perspective. You've been out in the field. Can you help us teach the class? And subsequently, myself and other people like me who have been experienced engineers and scientists, we've come back to help teach students now for a couple decades.
Yeah, I feel like every university needs this. I mean, I just know myself, there was so much of that that I didn't learn in college. So consequently, what you've now done is you're the author of the Career Toolkit, Essential Skills for Success That No One Taught You. And I told you, I had downloaded this on my Kindle, but just recently I went out and purchased several hard copies because I am thinking this is almost like a manual, a how-to manual on all of these things that really you should keep in front of you. But I am so excited about what you've done here. And I believe you've curated some awesome material that I believe is going to really help people. You know, I understand why you wrote the book because you've been teaching this class and now you want to get one to many.
It's funny when you said every university should have this because for years I was saying we need to expand to other universities. And it's also saying we should give some notes to our students. It's a very interactive class that we teach. So when I started this, I was just writing up some notes for our students, maybe something I could share with other universities. I thought I was writing up 20 pages of notes, but 20 pages quickly expanded and became the book. But you're right, it's designed as a how-to book. In fact, you don't have to read it linearly. You can just, oh, I gotta read chapter 7, I need to work my communication. Time to focus my career plan, back to chapter 1. So you can just pick up pieces of it because it was designed to be used as a manual, as you said.
I know that you spend a lot of time in the book talking about career plans. And you say, Dwight D. Eisenhower said, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. And so this is not a one and done thing either. But why do you believe people need a career plan? And how would even somebody go about starting to put a career plan together?
Well, if you think about any of the projects you've done at work, when the manager says, okay, we're going to build this system over 6 months, would you ever say, okay, sounds good. Listen, I'm not going to plan. We're just going to wing it and I'll see you in 6 months and hopefully we deliver. Of course not, right? They're going to say, that's nuts. Right.
You have a project plan.
Right. Let's have a project plan, a budget. Now we all know you're not going to follow that exactly. Things are going to go wrong. Things are going to change. You're going to get surprises, good and bad, and you adjust your plan. That Eisenhower quote is because too many people think, well, a career plan, how can you know what you're doing in 20 years? You can't, but you can start planning and adjust as you go. The questions we have in the book, and they're free on the website as well, it begins with, what do you want out of life? What do you want in terms of your family? What do you want to do in terms of giving back to the community? It also has questions, what do you enjoy doing? How much money do you need? Because your job is part of your life. And if you think about your job without thinking about the rest of your life, you're not going to define it well. You really have to take that larger, holistic view. So when you start with these questions, it helps guide you in the right direction. For some people, they say, I know this is my dream. This is where I want to be at 40. For other people, it's, I'm not sure. I'm thinking leaning this way. And both are acceptable. You just start heading down the path. The key point is that you need to regularly reflect at least once a year. For some people, it might be every few months. And you just kind of check in. How are you doing? Are your goals still what you want to do? Are you moving towards them? Are you developing the skills you need to get there, right? Just like your project plan. How are we doing on these tasks? So that's how we want to approach our plans, just like any other project we might take on.
Oh, I love that. I would have loved something like that, you know, as a college student. And there's a couple things here that I kind of want to bring out. One of the things that you talk about in the book, it's almost like a decision tree. You put some examples out there, Mark. So you say, I had a BS in accounting. And then you say, okay, do you want to go the public route? Do you want to go the corporate route? Here's some offshoots of that and things that you can possibly think about doing. I think you've got a decision tree for being a lawyer. You know, you put these things out there. And I just think that that is so helpful because, you know, what's that old quote in Alice in Wonderland? You know, if you don't care where you're going, any place will get you there. You know?
Exactly. And unfortunately, so many people, they don't plan that way. And they just suddenly wake up one day and find this is where they are, but it's not where they want it to be. The key thing, a plan doesn't guarantee success, but not having one almost guarantees failure. So you want to create that plan and move towards it, and then just keep doing the course corrections, keep adjusting. And that's going to greatly increase the chances of your success.
I love that. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Mark Hirschberg.
Are you an IT executive with years of experience? Are you energized when you empower others? If I've piqued your interest thus far, you may be a great mentor for the TechLX program in St. Louis. TechLX prepares rising IT leaders to tackle today's challenges and prepare for tomorrow's demanding roles by pairing them with senior IT executives like yourself. Mentors receive coaching from technology partners and will be invited to all TechLX networking events featuring outstanding speakers of the IT industry. To apply, visit tpi.co/TLX.
Welcome back, everyone. So, Mark, this book is over 300 pages. I mean, you cover every major topic that I can think of, but you talk a lot about leadership, and this is a leadership podcast. How do you define leadership? And then you talk about influential leadership versus positional. And I'd love for you to say how you look at those two things.
Many people see leadership as positional. That is, your authority comes from your position. You can think of the military as the ultimate example, right? The officer says jump, the enlisted men say how high. You just have to do what they say. In today's world, that's no longer true. That might have been true in the 19th century, in the Industrial Revolution, the manager says do this. these days, that doesn't hold true, and especially in technology. Engineers who know they have many job options and engineers who need to respect their leader before they'll listen to him or her, you have to use influential leadership, not positional. You can't say, because I'm the boss. You have to influence, inspire, encourage, and explain what you're doing and why. So true leadership comes not because you say, I'm in charge. It comes because you have a vision for the future. And that vision could be some large, let's change the world, or could just be, let's get the project out on time. But you have some future state, and then you influence people that we need to come together and deliver on it. That is the essence of leadership. And for many people, especially junior people, they unfortunately see leadership as, I become a leader once I get this title or role, and they hold off on their leadership development. For young people, start leading today. For those of us who are further in our careers, explain this to your junior people, because leadership's additive. If your whole team is leaders, that doesn't mean you're less of a leader. It means you now have more resources on your team by which to lead.
Great point. Well, let me ask you this. You know, you say in the book, you can practice leadership every day. How would somebody practice leadership every day?
Here again, we have to recognize leadership is such a broad concept, and it is not simply, I am standing up and saying, you do this. Leadership is using all these other skills. A good leader knows how to negotiate. A good negotiator knows how to communicate. All these skills are additive and they come together. So as we practice and build these skills, we're building up our leadership ability.
I love that. Well, that's a great segue. You talked about negotiation, but in the book, you claim that someone can make $30,000 with your advice. That's a pretty bold claim. You know, how can someone do that by learning negotiation?
So imagine you're 30 years old and you get a job offer. Job offer is for $100,000 and you've read a negotiation book. You've taken a course. You've learned some basic negotiation. So you go back and say, I'm going to negotiate this offer. And you negotiate for a salary of $101,000. That's it. That's not a huge lift. That's 1%. You don't have to be the world's greatest negotiator to do this. You get that 1% increase. And now you hold this job for 30 years. What just happened? You made $1,000 more for 30 years. That one tiny negotiation just earned you $30,000. But of course, you're not going to be in that job for 30 years. You're going to have other jobs, promotions, raises. You're going to get more than just $1,000. Learning to negotiate, again, not to be the world's greatest negotiator, but just learning to be a little better at negotiating, will add tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to your career. And now negotiating happens to be the most obvious example, because we say, oh, I see how I just got literally more money. But if you learn to be a slightly better communicator, if you learn to be slightly more effective when dealing with your manager and your corporate culture, being a slightly better interviewer, networker, leader, any of these skills will have the same types of returns. It won't be a direct, here's $1,000 more, but you will be seen as a leader, seen as bringing success, and more opportunities will come your way that will translate into more success for you.
Well, I do want to talk about one more thing, because I think this is so important, especially if there's young people that are listening. There's a section there called job optimization, managing your manager. You know, you need to understand that when you come into the job, there's several things that you need to do related to your manager. Can you just go through just a few of those?
When we're trained in college, we're taught just to get the right answer. And what you do with the answer, you put in the box on the bottom of the page and you get your check mark and you're done. That's it. Just place the answer. But in the real world, it's not simply getting the right answer. It's about conveying that answer and delivering that answer and making sure you're heard, knowing how to manage your manager. How does your manager like to engage? One of the clients I'm at now, we're a company in which the expectation is you respond to emails quickly. That's just the culture. And if you're not someone who normally does that, you're going to be seen, perhaps subconsciously, as someone who's not very responsive. So recognizing, how do people communicate? When you pitch your boss an idea, does your boss want, give me five ideas, and your boss wants to decide, but you know how to guide her towards the decision you want? Does your boss just want, give me the final idea and why? Does your boss like it communicated in email, as a PowerPoint, sit down and have a conversation? These things are subtle, And it does involve certainly getting the right answer, having the idea, but how you convey it, how you deliver it, how you make this more useful to your boss. This is all vitally important to being successful and delivering value.
Yes, I just think that is so important. I've got a mentor of mine that was a multi-time CIO. You know, what he said was, if there is a problem, I want to hear about it sooner rather than later. And you talk about that in your book. And, you know, Don always said, come to me early and you have a coach. Come to me late and you have a judge. But that's the way he wanted to be communicated with, you know. And then you also talk about differentiating yourself. Even, you know, if there is a challenge, doing your homework, you know, before coming to your manager, because really making your manager successful, figuring out what's going to help them get to their desired state, and then they're going to continue to get promoted and hopefully they'll remember you, you know, and bring you along possibly.
That's very much how it works in the real world, because a good manager knows he only got there because of the work people like you did, and he wants to bring you along so he keeps being successful.
I just can't even tell the listeners how valuable this book is. So definitely I would highly recommend it. So Mark, I want to move on to another subject. I know you and I have talked about this. The reason that you wrote this book is because you want to help more people. You're very passionate about that. And I know that you've been involved in a lot of different organizations. So do you want to talk about one or two of the organizations that you have been involved in to help young people?
I've been lucky to do so much working with Code Ranch over the years, being on the advisory board of the Museum of Mathematics here in New York City. One of my favorite organizations that I'm on the board of now is Techie Youth. And we're taking kids in the foster care system or at-risk youth, kids who probably aren't going to college, who typically wind up in minimum wage jobs. We're teaching them basic IT skills. And this is something important that we can do in our communities. And there's an important lesson for us. What we're doing, we're not teaching them the be-all, end-all, how to be an IT expert. But by exposing them to these skills and opportunities, we can get them into a basic junior entry-level job, junior help desk. And that might, for many of your listeners, seem, okay, that's not what I want to be doing. But for these students, what we're doing is we're getting them on a different path. And suddenly they go from minimum wage jobs to a little more than minimum wage, but now they're in an office. Now they have opportunity. They have mentors. People can help them continue to grow. And that tiny little shift puts them on a whole new path. For those of us in our careers, we might be at a higher level, but still it's these small little shifts. It's that learning to negotiate just a little, and then suddenly down the road, it has this massive impact. So we can all learn how small changes in our own lives or in what we do with our community can have a big impact in the long term.
You know, I love this because I told you, especially at-risk youth and kids in the foster system, my goodness, they need a hand up. They really do. And so I absolutely love what you're doing with Techie Youth. Something else, I just want to move into a little bit of more personal with Mark. I found out that you are a championship ballroom dancer.
I am. I started dancing in college, and my girlfriend at the time decided she wanted to compete in ballroom dancing, which apparently meant I wanted to compete in ballroom dancing.
Right.
And I'm very glad that happened. I would not have done it on my own, but it was one of the best things I did. Throughout my 20s, I went all over the country. I competed at the national championships for 7 years, made a lot of friends, had a lot of fun. It even helped me professionally. That really helped my public speaking. Now, if you've seen dancing, of course, there's no speaking in dancing. But when you think about public speaking, what holds us back, it's our fear. It's the, is my fly unzipped? Am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to embarrass myself? When you go on the dance floor, well, sometimes you do embarrass yourself. You think, oh my God, that was such a horrible performance. And you are literally being judged. But when you do it over and over and you realize, you know what? That's okay. That's not a problem. No one's laughing at me. One thing I love in ballroom, if a couple ever falls down, when they get back up, the whole audience cheers. Everyone supports them. And it's such a great community. And that gave me confidence. So now when I go and do public speaking, yeah, no problem. Nothing can happen to me that's going to embarrass me. And that makes me a stronger speaker.
Yeah, I love that. I've got a friend right now. Her name's Artie Sharma, and she is an EVP at MasterCard International. And during COVID, she said, you know, my boys had always taken piano lessons, but I never had the chance. And so she's been learning piano, you know, but you can learn from everything that you do. And so I think that that's really important to, you know, if we have the eyes to see that.
You can. And it's going to just help you see the world in a different way, gain new perspectives. It's also great for building our networks. When I go to conferences and job events, well, I hang out with a lot of other people in technology. But from ballroom dancing, yeah, there are technology people, but there are lawyers and accountants and doctors and people from all different backgrounds who I might not otherwise come across. So it's a great opportunity, whatever your hobby, to add in a lot of diversity into your network.
Yeah. And you talk about networking a lot in your book and how important it is. And sometimes, you know, we as technologists, sometimes, we're just getting the project done, you know, but it's so important to have that network. I also know you're a cufflink guy.
I am.
You collect cufflinks. And I was noticing today, I'm like, does he have his cufflink on? And you sure do. Now, what inspired you to do that?
The listeners might not be able to see. These are the Career Toolkit cufflinks that a friend got me. She got them custom made for me when the book came out as a gift.
Oh, that's cool.
Most of the cufflinks I get, I have over 400 pairs. And actually, I'll tell you how it started. My ex-girlfriend worked on Wall Street. I was consulting to NBC, and she had been telling me I need to dress better. I thought, you know, I'm a tech guy. I'm like, yeah, I dress okay. You know, I wear a clean shirt. And one day I said, it's really interesting. The directors, they seem to wear French cuffs 30% of the time. The VPs wear French cuffs about 60% of the time. The GMs about 90% of the time. She said, yes, this is what I'm telling you. People signal by how they dress. And they signal other ways as well. They talk about in the book, but dressing certainly one of them. So she got me a whole bunch of French cuff shirts and my first few cufflinks. And for the first year, I just had the standard, the knot, the square, boring stuff. But then I found the fun ones. So of these 400 pairs, I have fruits and vegetables and food. I have planes, trains, automobiles, comic book characters, countries of the world, hand grenades, just all sorts of interesting things.
So do you display them like in a shadow box situation, or how do you?
Yeah, have them out and they have to be organized, because when you pick 400, it's hard. So I'll typically think about, what am I doing that day? Oh, am I wine tasting tonight? Okay, wine cufflinks. Or is it National Adopt a Cat Day? Okay, get the cat cufflink.
Right.
And my friends, my coworkers know about the cufflinks. And they will ask, like, okay, where are your cufflinks today? They like to see it. And so that also helps with my personal brand. Although I'll tell you the funny thing. When I was younger, I said, I never want to be in any job where I have to dress up. Now, I work in tech startups. I don't have to. I choose to dress up like this. But sometimes when I'm going to an event at night, especially that's a hardcore tech event, I actually have to go and dress down, because if I show up wearing a French cuff shirt, they think, you're just some suit. You're some business guy.
Yeah.
You don't have the cred.
You're not going to fit in. Right. Well, I love that. How fun, you know, even to pass down. So, Mark, this is called Something Extra. I have to ask you, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
You need to be able to view things from multiple perspectives. It's so easy for us to have our own standard perspective. And it's what we usually go to, and it's gotten us very far. But it's important to look at things from different angles and perspectives. Sometimes it's because we might miss something. It's important to understand whether it's customers or partners or just community, how they might perceive something, but also opens us up to other opportunities to prevent other problems when we look at things through a different lens. So as leaders, we always have to step back and say, you know, I think I have the answer, but let me just look at it differently and see if that answer still makes sense.
So wise. So Mark, I would love for you to talk to the audience or the listeners about your book. Where can they find it? And then I know you have a lot of free tools that you're offering to people as well. Again, you're just wanting to help people. And I just absolutely love that about you.
You can go to the website, thecareertoolkitbook.com. From there, you can get in touch with me. You can learn more about the book, including where to buy, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, even your local bookstores. There is also a free app you can download, because when you read a book like this, as you noted, you don't just read it once and forget it. Unfortunately, we do, because then we go on to the next book. So the app, it's like a daily affirmation, except the content comes from the book. So after you read the book, it reinforces. You don't even open the app. It just pops up each day. Say, oh, right, that was a good networking tip. That's important about negotiations. Or right before you go into an event, if you're going into a negotiation, you're not carrying my book with you. Open the app, swipe through it, get a crash course, a refresher on what you learned in the book. So that's all free in the Apple and Android stores, but it's linked from the website. The other thing on there, on the resources page, I link other books, other websites, other tools you can use. One of the most helpful is when you want to learn these types of skills. It's not like when we learn technology where I just say, okay, I have to learn the commands. I have to learn how this works. That's knowledge transfer. Here, the best way to learn is to have a discussion with other people. And it's learning, okay, how would you communicate? How would you lead in this situation? Oh, I never would have thought of that. And so what you want to do is download this guide to how to create this type of learning group in your organization, might be your company, might be your community, might be setting up a local meetup group. It's a free download. Now, yes, you can use the book, and I break down, here's how to divide up the book to use it. I don't want this to be seen as a ploy for the book. You can use any one of the other great books I list, any other books you like. You can use wonderful podcasts like this one after hearing these episodes. Have that discussion with your local peer learning group. Discuss what you learned here, and it's going to make you so much stronger and more effective. That and everything else you can find on the website, thecareertoolkitbook.com.
I could not agree more with you. I think the peer learning, the reinforcement, you know, people have to have drilling, right? You have to see it many times to get it into your DNA. So Mark, this has been so much fun for me. I just so appreciate, I've loved this interview. You're a growth mindset person and so am I. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you for having me and thank you to your listeners for giving me your time.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.